You could be anywhere doing anything, but you're hanging out with us, and we appreciate that. So wherever you're listening and however you're listening, we appreciate you guys for listening. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Game Plan Podcast. Alex Goodwin is my name. You can follow me on the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on the artist formerly known at Twitter. You can see it right there, at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Texas, S as in Stanford, M as in Michigan. Kennedy Miller could not be here today, but the big homie, the man, the myth, the legend in Louisiana, sports writer Lamar Gafford. What's up, dog?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. Now, do we really have to call this X? Because, man, I mean, my mama named it Twitter. I mean, they named it Twitter pretty much. I mean, why can't we just call it Twitter?
I think that is a very cogent point. Like, we do not have to call it what this extremely entitled idiot decided to rename this for no apparent reason. Like, does anybody know what X stands for? Like, is this, like, maybe he's a little bit woke. Maybe this is an allusion to Malcolm X. I don't know. Like, I have no clue what Elon Musk is trying to do. Is it just me?
I don't know either. Some people said that he named it after his kid. His kid is named X or something else like that, but I don't care. I mean, it's Twitter to me, damn it.
Yeah, man, it's just going to be Twitter to us. But we are glad to be back speaking with you guys. We took a long break after the NBA Finals, but we are back for football season. And that is why we're actually here to talk to you guys today, because this is our college football preview. And Lamar, speaking of running a good thing into the ground, you know who's not going to run a good thing into the ground like Elon Musk?
What's that?
Kirby Smart in Georgia. Okay.
There we go.
They are not going to mess this train up. Like, Lamar, I'm going to ask you this question. Will Georgia be the first team in decades to three-peat?
It looks like it so far because, you know, looking at the schedule that they have, they're really not going to be that much challenge coming into this. I mean, obviously, again, you're starting off against the juggernauts of UT Martin and Ball State to start off the season. And then after that, you know, you got your SEC opponents, South Carolina, they're okay. UAB, they're okay. Hey, the Deep South's oldest rivalry against Auburn, they're playing that very early this year. Auburn's okay. But then you got Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Florida, Mizzou, Ole Miss, Tennessee, and Georgia Tech. I mean, there's not really a game on the schedule in the regular season that they're going to have that's probably going to trip them up. And as obviously, I mean, there might be a team that may come up. Who knows? Ole Miss may give them a scare. Tennessee may give them a scare or something else like that. But I just think, again, Georgia's just is too powerful. And then more than likely, they're probably not going to their biggest chance of possibly losing before the before playing in the CFP, maybe the SEC championship game.
You know, the wildest thing about Georgia is at this point, Georgia has become turnkey with it. Like, they've have continued to bring in these top two and three recruiting classes year over year over year since Kirby Smart has gotten there to now. We think Georgia's the best team in the country, and we can't name anybody else that plays for them other than Brock Bowers. We have no clue who the quarterback is going to be. Well, they don't have Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis or N'Kobe Dean or the rest of them dudes, Devontae White. We don't think they're going to have that level of defense where they're going to unleash the gates of hell when they walk out onto the field. But guess what? We still think they're going to beat everybody by 35 or 40 points because that's how well they've recruited. You know what I'm saying? So, and it's scary because the moment I realized they had gotten to that level was when they lit TCU's ass on fire for four quarters. Okay. That was the moment I knew, oh, this is the unstoppable force at this point. They beat them down so badly. Like, I was texting one of the homies before the game. I said, how bad you think TCU's gonna lose tonight? And we each thought the score was gonna be, you know, somewhat respectable, 41-14. Like, you know, you got your ass whooped, but you didn't get completely humiliated. And the score was like 38-7 at halftime. Like, I turned that game off with like halfway through the second quarter. And then my daddy calls me back and says, son, are you watching the game? I said, no, man, I turned that off a long time ago. I'm watching Monday Night Raw. And then he says, yo, the score is 65-7. I'm like, you're joking. He said, no, man, they got the third and fourth stringers in there and just styling on them. That's what Georgia is doing at this point, man. So I'm going to ask you this question, man. You think Georgia's caught Alabama as the premier program in college football?
At this point, it is kind of sounds blasphemous when I say this, but yes, I think they have. I mean, you're looking at the body of work that they've done over the last couple of years, and I just think that they're now the team to beat. And again, Kirby Smart, you know, obviously we knew Georgia could do this. We knew Georgia could do this based off of their location, based off of their pedigree and everything. And it took basically a couple of cracks for them to try to get there. But I think at this point, Kirby Smart has figured this thing out. And, you know, again, it's just the unstoppable force at this point here. Georgia is basically has now become Alabama. They have become that team that you can basically pencil in every single year and just be like, yeah, I think they can win the national championship. And you don't have to tell me anything about what players they have or anything else like that. It's kind of just like, at this point, it's kind of like, this is the program. This is the machine they have. And whatever player that they have at this point, yeah, you probably have a feeling that, yeah, they're going to have a lot of players that are going to be in the first round. Those players are probably going to play for the Philadelphia Eagles. And also, those players are just going to continue to win ball games. Yes, there you go.
Yo, that is a very fair point. The Philadelphia Eagles, how many Georgia Bulldogs have they drafted? I think the only Georgia Bulldog they won't draft at this point is pulled pork-brained Herschel Walker. Okay? Just him. That's it. Look, they might try to go get Champ Bailey out of retirement. Like, we don't know. But I think that is a very, very, very fair point. And so, Lamar, I got another question for you. So, like, looking at over the full college football landscape, what team do you think is the most intriguing?
I think the most intriguing, and I'll stay in the same state here, LSU. They're probably going to be an intriguing squad because last year, when we saw them play against Florida State, we both were joking about this, and we said, man, those two teams are just Independence Bowl teams.
Yes, headed to Shreveport.
But both of those squads really impressed everybody over the year. Florida State did not have a bad year. And, of course, LSU went on to play in the Cheez-It Bowl. And so, you know, now I think both of those teams have some big goals this season and possibly getting themselves into a New Year's Six Bowl game. LSU is definitely one of those. And, of course, the buzz has been pretty big at Baton Rouge right now with the women's basketball team winning a championship and the baseball team winning the championship. Now I'm thinking the pressure is probably going to be pretty high here for LSU, for their football program, just to get them a chance of winning a championship. But if there's anybody that can really do that, Brian Kelly, he knows how to win ball games. He may be a jerk in doing that, but he knows how to win in ball games.
I think to me, with LSU, this is the reason why Brian Kelly came here. Brian Kelly came to LSU to have, in his mind, a legitimate shot at winning championships, a chance that he didn't feel like he had at Notre Dame, because there is a level of athlete that you can get into school at LSU that, because of the rigorous academic standards, you're not going to be able to get into Notre Dame. But he's got Jaden Daniels coming back, Mason Taylor, the tight end, coming back. They've always got good skill players. Always, always, always. And always have really good edge rushers. And that dude, Harold Perkins, he's a monster, Jack. A total unblockable monster. I think they're going to have a chance. I really do. But the question for me is, can you beat Alabama on the road? And for me, Alabama is my most intriguing team. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong here, this might be the first time since 2016 when Jalen Hurts was coming in as a freshman where the quarterback situation was completely unsettled. Like, it's three guys and we have no clue who they're going to trot out there, right? My big question is this, right? They're going to have good running backs. They need a big difference maker at wide receiver, because that's been a huge part of Alabama's success during the Saban era. For 15 years straight, they've had a first-round receiver on the roster, going back to Julio and Amari Cooper and then Ridley and then Jerry Jeudy and Devontae Smith and Waddle and Jameson Williams all the way down the line. Last year, they did not have a difference maker at receiver, and it showed. You know, so if your quarterback isn't going to be the person that can plug holes for you the way Bryce Young was able to do, the way Atua was able to do, if the quarterback is going to need you to do a little bit more for him, can Jermaine Burton be that guy? Can Ja'Cory Brooks be that guy? You know what I'm saying? And that's the big question I have. In at quarterback, if you have three quarterbacks, you really don't have one, because the only one of them we've seen play significant SEC ball games is Jalen Milroe. And he started that one game against A&M, and he did not look good. Like, just keeping it funky. Like, somebody made a joke and said, Alabama might end up having to run the wishbone. They're going to go out there with Milroe. Right? So, they're extremely interesting. Got a new OC in Tommy Reese. But, and given the rise of Georgia, and given what Georgia's been able to do the last couple of years, repeating, people are again asking, is this, you know, officially the end of the Saban dynasty? I think people have spelled the end many a day before. But this is the most serious threat to it at this point. Do I think it's over? I don't. Do I think they're going to have a good enough defense and a strong enough running game and just more talent than the majority of teams that they play? Absolutely, to figure it out. Yeah, I do. But will you be able to beat a Georgia in the SEC championship game? Will you be able to beat a Texas A&M? Will you be able to beat an LSU? Like, can you throw the ball at the end of ball games? That's really my big question. You know what I'm saying?
Right. The crazy thing is, man, it's so scary that they were so close to winning a national championship last year. Like, the two games they lost on the final play of the ball game.
Last play.
Right. Like, that's insane to me. But the thing is, we have come to know the Alabama standard at this point, and they have not won a national championship game in the long-suffering time of 2 years. So it's time now there where they're probably looking at Nick and like, hey, stop for us to win another one.
Man,
what's up?
You know, that is the wildest thing in the world. Because do you know how many people, how many fan bases, how many athletic directors, university presidents would humiliate themselves for their team to be the fifth best team in America?
Yes.
Do you know how many would do it? And now Alabama, they over there sitting over there, we're the fifth best team. Not a good year. A Sugar Bowl, who cares? Like the 2019 Alabama team, an argument to be one of the greatest college football rosters ever. But because that was the year Joe Burrow and them won the championship, and they just went to, what was it? They played in some New Year's game, I think it was. Nobody remembers or cares.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they have years where they just, you know, we go to the playoff, losing the first round. No one cares. Disappointment. Like, think about, these are clearly first world problems. Because you know who would give anything for their team to be one of the fifth best teams in the country, Lamar?
Who would?
Damn it, me. I would. Okay? Do you... you don't understand. This has to be the year for Texas. Okay? You know, like, my big thing with Sark is, if not now, when? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got all five starters back on the offensive line. Quinn Ewers is back. And most times in Sarkisian's offense, year two or three of the quarterback in that system, they really take off. You've got the second best wide receiver room in America behind Ohio State. You've got JT Sanders, the second best tight end in America, behind Brock Bowers. Like, you've got five stars in every single position group there. You've got a lot of depth. You've got a lot of experience. They fixed all the issues on the lines because Texas has always had really good skill players, but offensive and defensive line has been lacking. They've got all that fixed on paper. Like, this is an extremely talented football team. I think they might be, by the blue chip ratio from 247 Sports, like the fifth most talented team in the country. The problem is Texas has consistently been this level of talented. Like, I think since 2010, Texas has recruited 8 top 10 recruiting classes. You know how many times Texas has finished in the top 10 since 2010?
Talk to me.
One damn time. if Sark doesn't get it done now, like 8-5 is not acceptable. 9-3 is not acceptable, right? If he has an 8-4, 9-3, you might as well fire his ass now, because it's not going to get any better going to the SEC. You know what I'm saying?
So what you're trying to say is basically Texas is back this year, right?
That is not what I am saying. That is not what I am saying. Look, I hate when y'all do that. I really do. Because to me, back is winning 10, 11 games, 6, 7, 8 years in a row. As a kid, from like 2000 to 2009, Texas only lost 16 games. That's back. You know what I'm talking about? Being a consistent contender. Mm-hmm. We've only been to one Big 12 title game in 13 years. One. And like, legit, this is the most talented team Texas has had since Colt McCoy. I will say that. And you know, last year, I'm not one to really gas Texas up, be like, this is our year, this is our year. Last year, you remember when we did this show, I said Texas is going 8-4, did I not?
Right, you did.
And I said, the year is going to be this year. This is the year where we see what's like what the Sarkisian era is going to be. They were 5-7 in year one. They improved to 8-4 year two. This is the year. But is Texas back, Lamar? Don't set me up for failure, because I know what you're trying to do. If Texas messes around and loses some raggedy game to Kansas State or something, everybody going to pull this clip up. That's what they going to do. Damn you, Lamar, for trying to set me up.
But, you know, hey, in all seriousness, you know, we were talking about Texas last year, and we were kind of, you know, wondering what were they going to do. And like you said, 8-4, we kind of predicted that right on the nose. But what we did not predict was how they would perform against Alabama.
Yes.
They played a beautiful game against Alabama, a beautiful game, lost by 1 point, but they still played a beautiful game, that they were up for that matchup. They played hard. They played especially well. And now this is probably going to give them some confidence going into this matchup. Now, obviously, yes, the game is in Tuscaloosa. That's going to be a little bit tough. You're going to have under the primetime lights of ESPN. But it's still going to be a solid matchup regardless. And I think this is also going to not just only be the measuring stick for them this season, but possibly be the measuring stick for them coming into the SEC. If they can perform pretty well, they'll be all right. Oh, yeah. And by the way, the one guy that we did not mention, the guy behind me as well, too, as you can kind of see right up here.
Oh, yeah, man. Arch.
At Arch Manning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Man, you know, that Alabama game really scares me, because I think every year there's an Alabama game that we think like, oh, wow, they almost lost that game. Oh, well, they played a really uncharacteristic Alabama ball game. But Alabama still was able to eke out the victory. So the next year when those two teams play, everybody's like, you remember last year, they almost got them. And then Alabama goes out there and kicks their ass. Because I know you remember in 2020 when Alabama played Ole Miss, it was Lane's first year in Oxford. And the score was like 63-50. Like, it was a score from a big Monday basketball game in the Big Ten. Right? And so the next year we're thinking, wow, Lane might get them. And they got destroyed by Alabama the next year. That is what scares me, because I do think last year Alabama took Texas lightly, and I really can't blame them. Like, no one had really any reason to take Texas particularly seriously, right? Because I think all of us thought, realistically speaking, if Texas loses that game by 14-17, it's a win. You didn't get humiliated. Most of us thought Texas was going to lose that game by 30 points. Keeping it honest, most of us did. This year, I don't think Alabama is going to take them lightly. But I do believe if Quinn Ewers does not get hurt, Texas wins that ball game. You know, I don't want to be the coulda, woulda, shoulda, or moral victory kind of guy. But what does Quinn Ewers look like in a full four-quarter game? Because I think Sarkisian is going to call probably his best game of the year. It's going to be one of those. So, like, I'm really interested to see how Texas plays this year. I am. This is one of the, like, rare years in the past 13 years where I've been legitimately excited for a Texas football season. Because, damn it, Texas ain't been good since I was in the eighth grade. Okay? They haven't been good since I was in the eighth grade. And I ain't gonna lie, we always talk about, well, Alex Goodwin quit the Texas Longhorn football narcotic. I can't, baby. I can't, man. Look, I remember them years, them Vince Young years, them Colt McCoy years. That belt is still wrapped around my elbow. I just need a little bit here. I just need a tester. I just need a tester, man. But I got another question for you, Lamar. So what is a team that you think will not live up to expectations? Who do you think will be the most disappointing team this year in college football?
Let's stay in the state of Texas and let's just say Texas A&M.
Okay.
I mean, it's crazy because it's like everybody continues to gear up and say that this could be the year for them. But it just seems like I don't know if Texas A&M has had that return of investment so far from Jimbo Fisher. Yet at this point. And now the crazy part is this is, you know, how I kind of held back from calling, for basically calling Brian Kelly an asshole.
Yes, yes.
Texas A&M has three assholes on their coaching staff.
Boy, they got the
three of them.
Yo, they have like the Miami Heat big three of assholes. Like maybe big four, maybe big four. Okay. Jimbo Fisher.
Yes.
Bobby Petrino,
yes.
Who is human resources' yes. biggest nightmare, Steve Adazio and DJ Durkin.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Steve Adazio.
Yes.
Four of the biggest on the coaching staff, and it's just kind of like, yeah, let's just see how this will go. This will work well. This will work perfectly.
Like, and the thing about them is, can they put together a competent offense? Like, that is the biggest question. That's the only reason anybody would bring in Bobby Petrino. Because in the year of our Lord, 2023, Jimbo Fisher cannot put together a competent modern offense. Jimbo Fisher looked like he was over there trying to do his taxes or balance a checkbook while he was trying to call a play. Like, that is going to be the thing. Because they have the guys, like their defensive line, those linebackers, like in the trenches, they got the bodies to do this. They absolutely do. But we're sitting here in year number six talking about, is A&M going to turn the corner? Right? Like that is ridiculous. And the only reason we're sitting here talking about, not talking about Jimbo Fisher being on the hot seat, because he has a $100 million contract, and like what is the buyout this year? $76 million?
I can't pay it.
Yeah, like are they willing to unass $76 million if this goes south? Like they're stuck with him. Like, so he has like the ultimate level of job security, because what are they going to do if they go 8-4? What are they gonna do if the offense doesn't look any better? Nothing. Like, they have tied themselves to Jimbo Fisher inexplicably. When we say disappointing, how disappointing are we thinking? Are we talking about just like 7-5? Are we talking about 6-6? Or do you think A&M misses a bowl game again?
They got to be better than they were last year. And it's crazy. They were 5-7 last year. They won three games against top 15 teams, but we don't care about that because they went 5-7. I think they could probably go 7-5, honestly, because again, you look at the conference that, obviously the conference and obviously look at the schedules that they're playing against. They are playing against some very tough teams. Once they get past, obviously, the non-conference slate of playing against New Mexico, traveling to Miami, and then of course facing against my alma mater, ULM Warhawks, you have Auburn, you have Arkansas, you have Alabama. And you have a lot of the other teams as well. And of course, LSU is going to be very strong as well this season. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do after this. Arkansas is always going to be one of those teams that, shoot, Arkansas has a very good player and they got a Heisman candidate. And so Arkansas is always going to be a team that's always going to gear up for it and all that because, you know, they're always going to be tough. Let's not forget Ole Miss. They have to travel to Ole Miss this year. Lane Kiffin is always going to have his team up and running for it. So, yeah, you don't have to face against Georgia. That's a good thing. But then again, I can still see possibly four or five losses on the schedule.
I agree with that. So the team I think will disappoint, and I'm only saying this team will disappoint because there are such, I don't even know how to say, high expectations around a team that finished 1-11 last year, but the Colorado Buffaloes, like Lamar, I think we've been watching college football for a very long time. This is the most we've ever talked about a team that didn't even win three games last year, is it not? Like, I totally think it is, but I think with the way Deion is posturing, and I do think there are different reasons why different people do not like Deion Sanders. Some of it has to do with the fact that he's loud, brash, and black. Some of it has to do with the fact that people don't like the way he's building his roster. Some people have issues with the way he spoke about the types of players he wants to recruit, about defensive linemen, the way he described defensive linemen, and the characteristic quarterback he wanted coming from a two-parent household and all those other different problematic things. But like on the field, none of us really have a great handle on what this team is because there's only like 12 dudes from last year's team coming back. Like we've never seen a team bring in 68 new players. Mm-hmm. Like we've never seen something like that. And most of the transfers that they brought in that came in from other schools, they weren't particularly lighting it up where they were. Like other than Shador, Travis Hunter, and Alden McCaskill, the running back from U of H, who blew out a knee last year, so he missed all of last year, but in 2021, he was really good, ran for 1,000 yards as a freshman. How many other dudes on that Colorado roster can you, Lamar, readily identify?
I probably cannot, except for Omarion Miller. And the only reason why I can only identify him is because I covered him.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. And side note, we are at the point in our lives where we have children named after early 2000s R&B stars. This is very obvious. That first B2K album went platinum in his mama's Acura. That is very clear. I don't know. I just have to say that. But I think with Colorado, they had a different coach who was willing to temper expectations. And I think expectations should definitely be tempered because this was probably the worst Power 5 team in America last year, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you have one of the worst teams in America, this is going to be a slow build, a slow process to getting better. It just will be. You know what I'm saying? So 3 wins to me is improvement. But given we're talking about Deion Sanders and who he is and how he kicks it, no one's going to think 3 wins is an improvement. I will. Like, I'm telling you this. If they would have won 5 games, that's a miracle. A complete miracle. But I just think there's way too many things up against them. One, their schedule. They've got TCU coming out of the box, Nebraska. Then a couple weeks after that, they've got Oregon and USC. And then they got Utah at the end of the year. Like, UCLA, Oregon State. Like, there aren't very many games where I'm looking at where I'm saying, yeah, they'll definitely win that game. Colorado State, probably. Stanford, I don't know. Arizona State, it's a toss-up, right? But there aren't too many, like, yeah, they'll win that games. So it's going to be one of the most interesting things in college football. And also, we're going to figure out if Deion Sanders is built to lose. Because, you know, he's all, you know, reality show on the internet, talking big, the whole 9 yards. Like, it's his brand. That's what he does. I'm not knocking it. But that works when you go in 12-0, 13-1 in the SWAC, where you have a clear talent advantage, where you're bringing in a group of five roster to FCS ball in your wrecking shop. Are you going to have that same bravado? Are you going to have that same energy when you're getting your ass whooped? Because there are ass whoopings on this schedule. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. And there are. I mean, it's crazy because, like, we've done our fantasy booking ourselves when it comes down to the roster. And even me and my guy from that works for the Clarion Ledger, JT Keith, who does a very good job with the HBCU stuff over there, we've also done it as well with this. And every single time, he always asks me, you know, what do you think Colorado's going to do? I think Colorado's going to at least go probably 6-6, 7-5. And I'm like, yeah, let's pump the brakes on that because I think 3-9 is probably the best one right there because it's just like you said, the schedule that they have there. I mean, the first thing is TCU and Nebraska open up the schedule, and both of those schools, one, coming off of an embarrassing loss in the biggest stage here in the national championship game. And of course, they want to show that they are still for real. And then Nebraska, who now has Matt Rhule, and they want to try to make sure that it's a new day over there with them as well. Of course, then, you also have some of the other schools, USC as well, and coming up as well. So I'm just looking at it. Like I said, 3 wins for them. Consider that an achievement. They can build from there, and then there you go.
Let's move on to team under the most pressure. And we got to move quick here because we got to wrap up. So to me, the team under the most pressure, USC and Lincoln Riley. Because the biggest question for them is, can Lincoln Riley field a competent defense? You know what I'm saying? Or not even competent. Can they just be bad? Right? Just bad. But not god-awful. Because when they fielded defenses that were just bad at Oklahoma, they made the playoff in 2017, 18, and 19. So if they can just get that defense from just being horrid and unwatchable, given what they've got talent-wise with Caleb Williams, the returning Heisman winner, they should be able to make his shake. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, I don't think any of us, given Lincoln Riley's track record, none of us should ever expect him to field a competent 11 guys who can line up right, run to the football, and not have a lot of coverage bust.
That's true. And, again, I think USC is probably going to be another intriguing team as well, because, this is a team that a lot of people think that they're probably going to win, at least compete for a national championship and at least get to the college football playoff. And I think so too. But, like you said, if they can fix those things right there, they should be all right. We would hope here that losing in the Cotton Bowl against Tulane and that incredible game could probably wake them up a little bit. But, it's interesting to see. I think they could possibly win the Pac-12 or whatever's left of the Pac-12. But they have to really make sure that this season is pretty good, because once they get into the Big Ten, it's also going to be very interesting for that too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And to wrap this thing up, Lamar, who are your 4 college football playoff teams? Who are your 4?
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and say Georgia. I think Ohio State gets there this year. I think they may beat Michigan this year. I'm probably going to say USC does it as well, because okay, I don't think there's not too many resistance that they're going to have out of the Pac-12. And if I got to choose one of the SEC schools, why not, let's just say LSU in this, because I think they have an interesting chance of possibly making it this year.
All right. I'm going to go with Georgia, Michigan, because I just think Jim Harbaugh has Ryan Day's number. They kick their ass 2 times in a row. And this year, I think they make it a 3rd. I'm going to go Florida State. I think Florida State has finally gotten this thing back up and jumping. And I think Alabama. I think the SEC is going to get 2 teams in, like you said, as well. I think Texas is going to lose a game that they probably shouldn't. And that's what's going to keep them out. But we are out of time here on the Game Plan Podcast. Lamar Gafford, thank you so much for hanging out with me. Where can the folks find you on Twitter?
Yes, so you can find me on Twitter at Lamar Gafford. Once again, that's at Lamar Gafford, all in one word. You can also catch my words on SinLawPreps.com. The season is about to begin as well. And then, of course, you can also catch my words on Scorebook Live Louisiana. I've been doing some stuff about the top receivers coming back in the state. I'm also going to try to do some things about the top games, top linebackers, and maybe even the top athletes and special teamers. So, yeah, stay on the lookout for those.
All right. We most definitely will, my guy. You can follow me on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. Again, that's on Twitter at Alex Goodwin TSM. That's T as in Texas, S as in Stanford, M as in mother. Wherever you're listening and watching, and however you're listening and watching, thank you guys so much for listening and for watching. For Lamar Gafford, my name is Alex Goodwin. This has been the Game Plan Podcast. We will see you guys next time. Y'all take it light.